Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This episode of Nothing Major is brought to you by Vuori. Stevie J, I've been wearing their core shorts a lot lately, and people have been telling me that I won't be able to fit into them. They're wrong. I can. I feel like I look great in them, and they've sort of become my default shorts that I wear.
Yeah, the core shorts, they are all the shorts that I wear. I don't own any other kinds. They're most comfortable. They don't look like gym clothes. So when I am cruising around at the park, cruising around downtown, you name it, I look and feel as comfortable as possible.
Yeah, and they have this built-in liner that is actually like really comfortable. A lot of shorts that I've worn in the past have the built-in liner, and I had to cut the liner out because I didn't like it. Not the case with the core shorts by Vuori. Like, they've done the built-in liner perfectly.
Yeah, and Vuori keeps, you know, things simple. Just in general, the design, it's not too loud, not too flashy. It's great gear for whatever you're doing, and I've always picking up more items when I walk by the store close to home.
So Vuori.com, that's Vuori.com/nothingmajor is where you need to go to get 20% off your first purchase. So make it a big one.
Exactly. Along with that 20% off your first order, you will get free shipping in the U.S. on orders over $75 and free returns. So make sure you make that first purchase a good one.
It's definitely worth checking out. We totally vouch for everything Vuori makes, especially their core shorts. They're awesome. So Vuori.com/nothingmajor. Let's get on with the pod.
All right, everyone. On today's episode of Nothing Major, we got a Cincy recap, most of it, all the way up until the finals, because the finals on a Monday. We got big U.S. Open mixed doubles preview, which I'm pumped about. And we have Eric Buderak joining the pod. Good interview. He is in charge of, what's in charge of, Stevie? Like player relations?
I believe he's the director of player relations. We need to get a clarification on what is exact.
He's very important. Very important guy. He's joining the pod. So let's get going. All right, everyone. I got myself. I got Jack Sock. You're in a very nice hotel room right now. That backdrop is lovely. And we got Steve Johnson.
In a hostage cell over here.
In like the complete opposite, in an awful background. I think one of you's in New York, one of you's in Tennis Channel. And we got Charlie Fox and the team at SIFT. All right, it's Monday, and we've got the Cincinnati finals today. So this will come out. Cincy's going on. Sinner and Alcaraz. They've been in a... Since Sinner came back, they've been in a tournament 4 times together. Rome, the French Open, Wimbledon, and now Cincinnati. They've met in the finals 4 straight times. Stevie J, are they unstoppable?
Yeah, they're unstoppable. I mean, look at what's happening just on the men's side. It's you know, reminiscent of the Roger, Rafa, Novak heyday, where you could just pencil these two guys into the final and everyone's kind of playing for a semi or a quarter, whatever their seed may be. But it's pretty remarkable that these guys can just not skip. They just don't skip a beat. Sinner especially, he doesn't look flustered or phased or rusty at all when he comes back. Carlos sometimes has these questionable sets like he did in his first match there against Zoomer. But ultimately, these guys are going to be a great final. I mean, when we were in Cincy last week, we all predicted this final. And this is what the people want. Exactly what they wanted on a Monday at like 1 p.m. is a great final.
Right?
Brutal. And it's exactly what TV wants, what the spectators want, what everybody wants on a nice Monday afternoon while everyone's at work during a final.
Yeah. If you're on the West Coast, it's at noon. If you're on the East Coast, it's 3 p.m. Not much better. We've been talking about how brutal the timing is for these finals. But Jack, I want to talk about Sinner. He's now the 5th male to win 25 or more consecutive matches on hard courts. Federer's got that record at 56, which is nuts.
Yeah.
I would have thought 25, like Sinner would be right there, but 56 is the record for Roger. Do you think Sinner has a chance to become like the best hard court player ever? Like, part of me thinks that like he's going to win, like the streak he's on right now, winning the U.S. Open, the Australian Open, Cincinnati last year, maybe Cincinnati this year, Paris, Shanghai. Like, do you think there's a chance that he wins 16 majors on hard courts and another 20-something Masters series?
16 majors.
Sorry. 16 Masters. Yeah, 16 majors on hard courts.
Yeah, you said literally. 16 majors and 20
16
Masters.
16 majors on hard courts and like 20-plus Masters series.
How many majors does he have on hard court?
I'm starting to believe he thinks that, or I think that.
Yeah.
So I'm fired up right now. I just got off a red eye. I'm like, dude, ran up to the hotel.
Juiced up. You have some caffeine going. I don't think we'd be surprised. I mean, surprised, honestly. I think it shows like how good he is at like this stat. This stat's like getting lost in all the results because he's literally in every final. I feel like he's winning and playing for every title and every tournament that he plays in. So the fact that it's just like, oh, yeah, and he's now accumulated 26 hard court wins in a row. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I think we've gotten to the point where if it's not Sinner and Alcaraz in finals, then it's a surprising tournament. I think it's getting to that. And I think Sinner is the better player at the moment and wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know, 16 majors. But I think he's going to dominate hard courts for a long time.
16 hard court majors, not just majors.
Sorry, 16 hard court majors.
I don't think it's crazy.
He's going to just eclipse Pete 14 slams strictly on hard courts alone.
I don't know. Maybe.
There's two hard slams a year, so he's got to win for the next.
Does he have three on hard or four on hard?
He has two Australias, one US, right?
Yeah. Three on hard, one on. Okay.
So
yeah. 16 might be a good number.
It might be a good number.
He'd have to win the US Open, Australian Open for the next 10 years every year.
Oh. Well, if you put it that way, that makes it harder.
Yeah.
Isner said this like maybe last week, like the delta between Carlos Alcaraz and Sinner and then like the rest of the field is way greater than Fed, Roger, Novak and the rest of the field.
So he did the same thing, yeah. Fed, Roger.
Yeah. Well, currently we have nobody else that's won slams.
Yeah.
If you take Stan away at the moment, you have Novak, Carlos, Yannick. Am I like drawing a complete blank? Who else has a slam?
Chilich,
Medvedev. There's three other guys that have won slams like currently playing men's tennis.
Yeah, and they're not like Stan's.
I mean, Chilich and Stan's not winning slams. No offense.
Yeah.
Like Novak has a chance. So there's three guys that have won slams that nobody else.
It's nuts. I feel like we got to give honorable mention podcast Zverev back-to-back semis. Pretty impressive, but then just.
I'm thinking he's got some health issues, right? But I think it's a diabetes related.
Yeah. I heard, in the heat, I felt bad for him.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he lost like the last 16 points or something like that.
Hit a wall. But I think you're right. I think like a little the diabetic just got to him.
Because he's not a guy that gets tired. I mean, he doesn't get gas. No. So that had to be some type of body related issue.
He's still got to be feeling pretty good going into the Open, though. Going semi in the two big hardcourt events.
I mean, I think he would have been happy with a semi in Cincy. Yeah. Not in Canada.
Losing that one.
I mean, just without Carlos and Yannick. Yeah.
He should have won that one. Going into the, a hot slam, if this is like an issue right now, and he's already like 3 out of 5 as well, it could play a little bit on his mind, I feel like, going into that if he was just struggling in the last one.
It could,
one,
yeah. But. Good point. And it's going to be pretty hot in New York. I've looked at the weather. I want to know how I'll be doing in the broadcast booth, and it's like going to be like 80. It's going to be like 83 and humid.
You'll be in a nice air conditioned room. I think you'll be all right.
Yeah, Ben Shelton finally ran out of gas. I think a little bit, but good. My 3-year-old Owen right now, anytime tennis is on, he's like, "Go Ben Shelton, go Ben Shelton." I could be watching a women's match, and he just yells it when he sees tennis on the TV. It's a little much.
Do you not like that? You're not a Ben Shelton fan?
No, I like it, but there's other players too. I played, obsessed with Ben Shelton.
Do you think, he would be Ben would be his favorite player over you?
Yeah, for sure.
Tough.
His favorite player is Ben. What about, we got to talk about Terrence Atman. Am I saying that right?
Probably not.
It's probably Atman.
Atmane?
So first, I feel like, maybe it's just mostly me, an apology is due. At Roland Garros, he played Richard Gasquet, and I said he sucked.
To be fair, he did suck that day.
Yeah, right, he did.
I mean,
right,
to be fair, he did suck that day. But ultimately, what a run in Cincy, huh?
What a run. He's kind of fun to watch. Like, I'm I'm kind of a fan now. I apologize, and I'm also a fan simultaneously.
He's got just the right amount of crazy in him to entertain you and keep you like captive, you know, onto the screen. Yes. You never know what you're going to get.
I feel like Jack, you don't know what's coming. Yeah, like
is this a one like just a great tournament, or we think he's going to like be like Moutet, you know, and like just be around like in these tournaments now.
Yeah, I think the confidence will lead to like solidifying yourself in the top. I don't know what he's going to be ranked now, but. I think he'll be a top 50, top 60 player. I don't know if he's gonna, you know, break through into something crazy or a lot higher than that. Obviously, he showed the level of tennis he can play, but I think he also surprised himself with his results this week. I don't think anybody was expecting that, including himself. So amazing week, amazing results for sure. But I don't think he's gonna be like making, you know, deep second week runs at slams. But he's just fun to watch. I will say, very fun to watch.
How hard is the turnaround going to be for him? Because this will come out. This comes out Monday. We're recording Monday. He plays qualies, I don't think, today. I think they gave him the day off today. He has first-round qualies tomorrow.
What?
So he lost in a semi in a master series on Saturday, right? Saturday. And now it's just like, hey, just go back, court like 9 at the U.S. Open. There'll be like 35 people there, qualies first round. Do you think he makes it out of qualies?
Well, everyone's watching mixed doubles probably.
Do you think he makes it out of qualies? I'm just curious, like, because that's like a hard, like, mental turnaround.
Although, you know, he's in the draw with the number 2 seed in qualies, De Jong, who's that South African guy? Who's pretty good. So he'd have to beat him. I think he gets out of qualies. I think he continues the momentum train. He's also, you see, he's like a brainiac. Like,
look.
Although I got one issue with this.
What do you got for me?
He said he has an IQ score of 158. You can't tell people your own IQ score.
Yeah, right.
Someone else has to like be like, hey, by the way, Jack, like you got to have someone else brag about you.
You want somebody to pump that for you. You don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to come out and be like, well, I'm also smarter than all you guys after you're like one big result. Like, yeah.
No doubt. He's probably smart. He's probably smart.
Not denying that.
Look, can't talk about your own IQ. How would you even get an IQ score?
I'm telling you guys, I want to do this. I all want to take a test and see how dumb we are.
I'll take a test.
See, with the football season, we could take the Wonderlic test for quarterbacks.
No,
be funny.
That would be funny. We might have to go IQ test for the pod.
I was gonna say like our bracket challenges for the slams. I'll do like an IQ bracket challenge, and everyone can like submit their IQs.
Hey, why is it? You guys ever notice when people are like, "Oh, these players are so smart"? It's always like the ones that like, you know, Andy Murray, Medvedev, Simone, like these guys that have ugly games. Why are they automatically like the smart players?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it annoys me a little bit, honestly. You like you can't be like just a big basher and be smart about it too.
You also just said on the last pod that you don't talk any strategy.
Just take my name, not me.
Everyone's definition of being smart on the tennis court is so different, though. So how can you just label yourself as a smart tennis player when there's so many different avenues to be smart on the court? Like,
yes, I could argue that Riley Opelka plays a smart way of tennis.
You could argue that Stevie played a very smart way of tennis. Neither of us get a backhand. He Correct. Finds a way with the slice. We find a way to play. Why is he not as smart as somebody else finding a way to do it? And or, yeah, the serve bots and anybody. Like they.
I'm with you.
You know, I was going to say, I might get some hate for this or something, but I think it's the players that know they're boring that can then call themselves smart. Like there's nothing flashy about them. They just basically play baseline games. They outlast the other guy, which is great for you. Obviously, it works a lot. Very successful players that have labeled themselves smart. But it's never like the flashy, fun people to watch, the people that just hit, play baseline games basically out there matches and then call themselves smart players. That's
right.
That's my take.
Sinner's probably a smart player.
Yeah. I would think so.
I assume Sinner and Alcaraz are both very smart on the court.
Going back to scheduling real quick, like I know the tournaments, like Bob Moran at Cincinnati does not want a Monday final. The US Open does not want a Monday final. They have to now worry about Alcaraz and Sinner are playing today at 3:00 and we're going to get to the women, and Swiatek, by the way, is also playing later tonight. And then they have mixed doubles tomorrow.
Yeah.
They got to be worried if Sinner Alcaraz all of a sudden play like a 3-hour epic that they're going to like pull from the mixed doubles. I hope they don't, because I've never been more excited for a tournament than I am the mixed doubles. But they got to like change that next year.
Chances are high that they both pull out. I mean, just right, like getting there late,
yeah.
Something on the body. They're not going to go out there for, because they're not playing for the money. I mean, they don't really care, I would assume.
Yeah. Women's draw, Swiatek and Paolini, they're playing at 6:00 tonight. And then I'm assuming private jet to New York after for the mixed.
Does the men's final wait for them, or do they go on their own?
They go on their own, dude.
Yeah, yeah, right. I'm just like, I don't think they wait, you know?
Do you think Sinner and Alcaraz are sharing a plane tonight from Cincinnati to New York, regardless of result?
Yes.
No, ooh. I think both teams are too big to do that.
No.
They got a big private jet, though.
They got a big private jet.
16 passengers. Ooh, yeah. I'm going to say I'm with... Who said share a plane?
I think they share.
I think they share, too. Jack's saying separate rides.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the devil's advocate. Yeah,
they hop on, they get on there, and they go. It's like a 90-minute flight to Teterboro, and they'll be in their hotel rooms comfortably for a nice Spanish dinner at like 11 p.m.
We'll figure it out tomorrow. All right, the woman's side, Iga and Paolini. Iga's flipped the script. She was like clay court specialist, only went on the dirt, and now all of a sudden winning Wimbledon, and now in the finals of Cincinnati, which is, you know, quote unquote, a faster hard court. It's pretty impressive. You don't see that often, like on a men's side or a woman's side, where they just like overnight basically like kind of change the narrative. You would have expected maybe Iga to semi-final Wimbledon and then semi-final Cincy, but like Stevie, I know she's not ranked number one. Is she the best player in the world right now in your mind?
She is playing the best, that's for sure. And I think it goes back to her kind of, let's call it like after the French, of dealing with the, not her streak, but all the success that she's had there in the past, let's call it 4 or 5 years, kind of letting go, being okay with not being the number one player. I think that's hard mentally and emotionally on a player. And I think it just weighed on her. And now at this point, she's maybe not talked about, right? Everyone's talking about Coco, Sabalenka, the other players, where it's like, okay, let's kind of forget about Iga for a second. Not forget, but, you know, kind of in the back, just in the background, and she's playing extremely well. And look, she is playing the best tennis right now. And I think she, if not the favorite going into New York, will be the second. I still think Sabalenka might have the edge, like the betting favorite. But I think, you know, Iga is right there. I mean, she's winning all the big tournaments. She's playing well. She's always been a strong competitor. And if she can prove this on a faster surface, that's a bad sign for everyone else.
Yeah. Is rough week for the American women in Cincy. Like they, it's not their best week.
That's so all right. Anyway, they're all going to peak in New York.
They're going to peak in New York.
Yeah.
Jack, is Paolini, she's contagious, like to cheer for, don't you think?
Yeah.
She's got that fun. Francis Tiafoe smile. She's so like anytime she's on the court, you're just like, yeah, I'm cheering for Jasmine.
Yeah. It looks like she just really enjoys like playing and has a great time playing it. And as somebody that I feel like I tried to always enjoy playing when I was out there too, and maybe, yeah, smile more than other players and stuff. She is, it's contagious, very fun to watch, easy to cheer for, easy to root for. And definitely, yeah, her results and everything a lot better than I've probably expected in the last year.
Like, yeah, no.
In general, it's insane. Yeah.
Same. She like steps up every week.
Yeah. She's infectious to watch. I enjoy watching her.
Yeah,
she's
same, like, infectious. Same. You watch with a smile. You're just
yeah, like I'll be rooting for her in the final, Origa, for sure.
Yeah, same. All right, let's bring on Eric Buderak. I'm pumped for this interview.
We are excited to have Eric Buderak on, the senior director of player relations at the US Open, a Gustavus Adolphus alum. And most importantly, for me personally, I know John is not here, but maybe the greatest fantasy hockey player of all time. This guy does not lose in fantasy sports. I know Sam's shaking his head.
Fantasy hockey is so stupid. Can we
no, not, wait, not for booty. This guy is, he's basically the Roger Federer of fantasy sports. Wow. But most importantly, he takes care of us all at the US Open. He's a 2014 Australian Open doubles finalist. And we are lucky to have him on the pod to talk the amazing mixed event coming up here in the next couple of days. So Booty, welcome and thank you.
So good to be here, guys. I'm an avid listener. Thanks for all that you guys do for the sport.
We're doing more for the sport now, I feel like, than we did when we were playing, unfortunately. But
potentially true.
But Booty, first of all, the mixed doubles. How did it come about? Did you guys, you know, what's the process like from changing a traditional so-called event in the mixed doubles to this exhibition style event? In the fan week of the US Open?
Yeah, it started, I think, 3 years ago. Lou Scheer was our commercial officer at the time. He was our CEO up until recently. He just left to go run the New York Mets. But he had seen, I think, Serena and Murray play mixed at Wimbledon that year. It was front page news. He had, you know, we'd also been coming off the Roger versus Serena in the Hopman Cup. And we were like the day before we were opening the doors and we were kind of sitting by Ash, and he goes, you know, how do we get, you know, Serena, Roger, the top players to play mixed doubles at the Open? And, you know, my mind went to all the reasons why we can't do it, right? You know, there's not enough prize money. They need their days off. And he stops me mid-track and he goes, no, Eric, I didn't ask you why we can't do it. I said, how can we do it? And it was sort of, is that conversation that sort of sparked it as to, no, this is something special, right? Other sports are trying to make combined events, Steph Curry versus Sabrina Ionescu shooting three-pointers, you know, manufactured relay races. And we actually have like a combined mixed gender event and mixed doubles, but it was being underutilized. People weren't watching it. You know, ESPN wasn't covering it. So we decided to take a test last year. We ran this one night mixed madness match. We had Shelton and Coco, Tsitsipas and Badosa won it. And that was our test case for a couple of things. Number one, you know, if we put a little money on the line, will players really truly go out there and try, or will it feel like an XO? And, you know, Taylor took the first ball of the match and almost like, you know, at Osaka's head. And it was like, oh no, Taylor's very much taking this seriously. So that was good to see. And the other one was, you know, would fans show up? And we had like 12,000 people come out that night for something that we just sort of threw together. So that was sort of our test. And we thought, okay, this is something we can do. And then it was about building a format that made sense for the players, that was possible for top players to participate in. We knew Fan Week was really our window that was possible, and still something that was like a credible Grand Slam championship. And, you know, we have to play it in a shorter amount of time. We know that, but we felt like what we landed on with 16 teams over the course of a couple of days is still, a really credible championship that we feel good awarding the, you know, Grand Slam title to.
Did you have to get this like okayed from the other Grand Slams too, or are you allowed to just make this change on your own?
A little bit in between. There is a Grand Slam rule book, and there was some approvals that we needed to get. With mixed doubles, there was a little more flexibility than some of the other events, so we were able to push a little bit harder, but there was definitely still a level of approval that we needed to go through. And there was a bit of a rocky process in the last 9 months to make sure that the tours were on board and the other Grand Slams were on board. And I think ultimately we landed in a good spot.
Do you think the other Slams will follow suit now with this and copy paste the format?
I personally think that they will. They've told us that at least in 2026 that they're not going to, that they're really set on their current competition. But look, I mean, we're a day away from this event happening. So I think a lot remains to be seen in the next, you know, 48, 72 hours. Is this event really a success? On paper, we're super excited about the draw. But, you know, we're going to have kind of hold judgment. And I'm sure they probably will be watching us closely to see how it goes.
Yeah. So when did this get officially done for you guys? Like, you're talking about like the process, the hoops that you have to jump through to get this into Fan Week, moving it from the regular event. And was there a lot of buzz around the players for it? Because I know as for you, being, you know, a very accomplished doubles player, you have a lot of friends still on the doubles side of the tour that aren't so happy. They have verbalized it quite frequently on X and social media. But how is that kind of, how has those two processes been for you?
Yeah, there wasn't really one official day. Like I said, we were working on this for years. You know, we were tweaking. I was been tweaking the format in my head and on paper as to what this could possibly look like. February was when we made our first like announcement to the tours. We met with the player councils and the player reps and the CEOs of the tours. So that was the moment that it really sort of spread amongst players. And there was mixed opinions. I mean, everything from a couple agents told me that like within a day of us, you know, announcing the format, players were already pairing up. I think like Swiatek and Rude paired up in like the first 12 hours that anyone got wind of this. On the flip side, there was a lot of doubles players who were really upset, and they, many of them have my cell phone and many of them called. You know, meeting Indian Wells was a busy week that I had to have a lot of conversations. And I understand doubles players' concerns, right? I lived that life and I had a lot of really good conversations with people. I don't think they liked what we did, but I think once they understood the lens that we were looking through, which is truly to like grow the sport, something that fans first, they understood. And that was really kind of the best place that we could land with that group of players.
As far as the pairings go, Like you just said, like Iga and Casper got together. Did you guys help facilitate any pairings, or did you try to manufacture any of the pairings, or was it all organic?
It was mostly organic. We tried to stay out of that business. I didn't want to be matchmaker. So most of them, I would say, found partners on their own. And you can probably, you know, identify all of those. You know, the one was weird was I met with Sinner in Rome. And, you know, he was interested in playing and he said, you know, who's available? And I just kind of said, well, here's like four or five players that I know are looking, right? And that have reached out and said they want to play. And so then ultimately he chose Emma Navarro. And then like a week later went on the Tennis Channel and it's like, oh, the USTA had me play with Emma. I was like, that's not true. But I do think some of those players, like, I think he, you know, he was just looking for like a little guidance and we, you know, sort of showed no different to like how you have a looking list, right, on site at some of the Grand Slams. And we tried to provide that. But no, we wanted people to choose someone that they felt comfortable with and wanted to win with, frankly.
Did I got one little follow up. Did like Serena or Roger or Rafa ever just shoot a text out to inquire? That's, you know, you've probably seen that.
Yeah, Sinner did ask if Serena would be an option. Ooh. I believe Serena's not back in the doping protocol. So when you come back and being a top player, like guys like me, we could probably jump right back in. But I think they have to like...
It's like a 6-month process.
Exactly. So I don't know if Roger or Rafa are actually probably in the same situation, but I did not hear from Roger or Rafa about playing either.
That would be unreal.
That'd be insane.
Yeah.
Booty, I mean, we know you've been tournament director of other events now, you know, being in player relations here at the US Open, it is a massive undertaking. Does that change at a Grand Slam compared to, let's call it Cincinnati or, you know, a 250 event where they want certain things or they need certain things compared to those events?
It's a bigger size and scope. You know, we have a bigger team. You feel a little bit more stressed because like, certainly during like the COVID era, especially, right? Like, you know that the decisions you make or the things that you do are going to be on ESPN, right? So it's like the world is watching. But it's the same players, right? And it's, again, we try to step back and look at it through the fan's eyes and be like, all right, what does the fan want to see? So today it's a lot about, can we get Ben Shelton to wear like a camera on court so people can see what it's like through his eyes? Can we get Tiafo mic'd up for an interview? You know, it's a lot of, you know, like asks vary on a given day. But ultimately, I think, you know that we have like the ultimate ability to showcase the sport to certainly the United States and a little bit the world. So it's like, let's take that seriously and let's put out the best product that we possibly can, because hopefully the more people that watch this want to go out and play tennis.
Yeah, do you think there's a bigger difference in today's generation? You talk about, you know, Shelton, Tiafo and these guys like wanting to wear cameras or microphones, being out there kind of in that public eye compared to the Roger, Rafa generation, where it just wasn't quite there yet. But I feel like this younger generation is a lot easier to get that, you know, interesting content out of, if that makes any sense, because they're just
They're so used to it, right? Because they sort of are content producers like all year long, right? They're constantly putting that out. I think they realize, because I know the agents definitely tell me that the weeks that they have at the US Open are so valuable, right? If they put out great content, if they have great results, what that can do for your followings, what that can do for your sponsorships, your earning power, that it's such valuable weeks. So I do think that they're pretty engaged while they're here. And I think, like you said, it's a different generation than Roger, right? Like when Roger was here, we used to close Arthur Ashe Stadium for practice all fan week. And he would practice in like a closed environment. And then one time we would ask him, hey, can you play on grandstand in front of the fans? And that would be like a big ask of Roger. Now we just open the gates and Carlos plays in front of 15,000 people for every practice. You know, he doesn't do that. To him, that's normal. So like a lot of things just sort of change over time. And as you push a little bit, you have to sort of sometimes let people almost graduate out. And as the new generation comes in, they get used to like a new norm.
When it comes to like the entertainment of the tournament, mm-hmm. last year you had Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce come.
Yeah.
When big stars like that come, when they reach out, is that somewhat of an undertaking for you guys to facilitate in terms of like security and keeping it quiet and things like that?
Yeah, there's a woman, Amanda White, on our team, and she's point for like all celebrity requests. And while that sounds like an awesome job, like I think it's got to be the hardest thing in the world to like sort through all these requests and like who you have to say no to. Because like on any given day, you start, like men's final, women's final, you start saying no to like really big celebs.
I'd pay a lot of money to see the list of people who you said no to.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, but then managing their, you know, like how do they get here? I mean, yeah, Taylor and Travis, that was like top secret until like they arrived on site and we had to get them into a suite. And I think we like had to wait for fans to leave before we could even like get them out of the suite. And, you know, it's a complex process, but Amanda does a great job.
Did you get to meet Taylor?
I didn't meet Taylor.
All right.
I got to walk Steph Curry around for like an hour. On the women's final, that was pretty cool.
That was very cool.
And this is funny. He's like, can I meet the players? And I was like, well, like Jess and Arena, like maybe, but like they're like playing a women's final in like an hour, like 90 minutes. Like, I don't know if they want to do like a meet and greet. So like both of them, I like approached each of them separately. And I was like, hey, you know, Arena, like I know it's not normal like for a meet and greet right before the match. And she's like shaking her head, you know, I'm like, but do you want to meet Steph Curry? And she's like, oh yeah. And it was the same with Jess too. They were both like, Steph Curry, sure.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Like that's a level of stardom. You're like, yeah, even 10 minutes before, like a quick hello for sure.
No, it's been, I mean, the celebrity talent that's coming through the door now, it's out of this world and super, super fun. Great for the tournament.
Yeah, and I know at the beginning you said you're an avid listener to us maybe over here at Nothing Major, but hard-hitting question. If you could only listen to one podcast for the rest of your life, would it be Nothing Major or Serve?
Oh, man, I can't make that decision. There's no way. No, I listen to both, man. You guys are different styles and different. Both of what these pods are doing for the tennis world are so good. We've had no great tennis pod that transcends like pop culture and like just general fans and actual like kind of like tennis nerds, if you will. And both you guys and Andy's pod are doing an incredible job of that.
All right, Booty. Last question for you before we let you get back to your next 3 weeks of probably no sleep.
Oh, you know what? Before you go, can I get an extra credential?
Aren't you in the Final Eight Club? You probably have plenty of credentials.
Yeah, but I already give that away. I need one more. I'm being serious right now.
Yeah, yeah. No. For the kids or for Abby? Sure. No worries. Have you guys been pumping up your live pod on Wednesday? I feel like this is gonna be, I mean, the fan week stage. I don't even know, but this is like in the Fountain Plaza set, thousands of people. I mean, this is a pretty big deal.
Huge deal.
Don't get nervous, boys. I'm sad I'm going to miss it. I'm
starting to sweat.
Yeah. Wow. We're excited to have you guys. So all the fans will come on Wednesday. Can't miss this.
But last question, Booty. What can we expect as fans and players? I know there's amazing renovations being done to the U.S. Open, you know, for this year and beyond. You know, what can the fans expect? What can the players expect when they get there in the next few days, the main draw players, to see what's new and what's shaking out around Ash?
So big renovations will be complete in 2027. It's a 3-year project, $800 million. The player areas, as you guys know it, will be largely the same this year and next year. But by 2027, all of the player areas will move into this new building, which you'll see the parking garage, which is complete, and they will live on top of that parking garage, which is formerly parking lot A. So all the player spaces will double in size. You guys know what the gym's like, what the restaurant's like, the locker room's like. It's just absolutely slammed, and the teams now are bigger than even in the eras that we played. So that's for the player side of things. For the fans, we're going to totally redo the Arthur Ashe Stadium from the seating bowl side. The suites are going to move. There's going to be new courtside seats for 26, and then they'll have some club spaces in 27. Couple new touches this year. There's a bar on court 17.
Oh, I love that.
Oh,
where?
Basically between court 16 and court 17.
Can you like see into 17?
You could see into 17. Yeah, great view. Almost like a nice like perch looking down into 17. Something that we're trying this year. We could use that maybe at some other points throughout the venue next year.
How much does the honeydews cost this year?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I haven't seen the price tag on that one.
I'll be enjoying a few of those. They're delicious.
But no, we're always trying to push the bar and try. I mean, we get so many fans that come and experience it and just try to have something new for them to experience every year.
Well, all right, Booty, thank you so much for coming on. You got a busy couple weeks ahead of you. We will catch up with you. Sam's already in New York, but I'll be there in a few days. Jack's there. But thank you for coming on. We are excited for the mixed doubles the next couple days. I think it's going to be amazing. The star power is insane. So good luck, and we'll see you when we get to NYC.
Thank you guys all. Sam, on court for the mixed doubles, right? We got mid-match interviews.
I'll see you tonight. I think there's a production meeting at 5 p.m. tonight.
I'm in that meeting. I'll see you then.
I'm in the meeting too. I will see you there.
And then I think he knows it, but Jack Sock will be handing out the trophy for the mixed doubles champions on Wednesday night.
Will I hear Wednesday night?
The 2010 yeah, really mixed open champion. What were you?
2011. That was the best 11. Year of mixed doubles sorry, US sorry. Open history.
That was a strong year for mixed.
It was a big year. It was a big year, and also gold medalist. And be hanging out with his gold medalist partner, Bethany Maddox-Sands.
So that's exciting. Yeah.
All on site.
Stoked. Really good excited. Stuff. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Booty.
Cool.
All right. We'll see you guys later. Soon.
Bye. See you, Booty.
All right, that's it for Eric Buderak. Thanks, Eric, for joining. That was fun. He's got a busy... He might be the busiest guy in tennis the next 3 weeks. He basically lives over at the U.S. Open courts, and especially these next couple days with the mixed doubles, so appreciate him coming on. And with that, let's talk about the mixed doubles draw, a massive event that starts 24 hours from now. Who do you guys have as your favorite to win it? I'll go first. I know I just asked you guys that question. I have Shelton... Townsend are my favorites to win it. Unseeded duo. Throw all the seeds out the window in this event, though. Shelton Townsend are my pick to win this event. You guys?
I'm going to go with the Taylor Fritz Rybakina duo.
Rybakina.
Rybakina. We just heard Booty say how...
Ooh, that's going to be a tough semi, I think.
Oh, God. But then you have Sinners.
It just
Fritz
depends.
Rybakina, yeah. Fritz Rybakina played last year's champions, Vuvasori and Irani. First round.
Vuvasori.
I'm like kind of second guessing my pick now, but
don't second guess.
We know Taylor's gonna be firing out there, leaving no stone unturned on the court. And I think he like takes a lot of pride in winning like those tiebreak tens things and the things in the past. Like he loves winning these kind of fun events, I guess.
I honestly think Shelton, I hope not, but he may kill someone out there. He's gonna hit 150 mile per hour serve, like body. Somebody's gonna die. And I hope that doesn't happen, but that's why I'm taking Shelton and Townsend because
I already took them. You can't take them.
I'm taking them. That was, what you make the rules here and you change them all the time. So I'm done with you.
Fine.
I'm done with you.
Me? And Stevie would have had it first if you didn't ask a question, then answer
correct.
It first
you asked
yourself.
Us first.
So
it's actually,
fine. Good
but
point.
Yes,
good
I'm
point.
Taking Shelton Townsend just because I mean his serve is insane. He's never going to get broken. We know how good Townsend is at the net. She's number one in the world in doubles right now, and I think it's going to be hard. Like Swiatek, Ruud, I don't see them being a great team. You know, like there's just some teams I just don't see the fire you needed in a quick format, first to four, right? Like it's going to be quick. You better come out firing. That's why I'm taking Shelton and Townsend.
Especially the Sinner, Alcaraz, and Iga. They're going to get to New York tonight at really late, and then they play tomorrow midday. There's zero practice. None of these players that are playing singles, that are singles players, have practiced mixed doubles.
To be fair, this is you actually said the wrong guy. If you think Sinner is the best singles against doubles players, you should have taken him because he can beat anyone.
Ooh.
So just another point for me.
This is different.
It's always different when it doesn't fit your criteria, but that's okay. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is going to be the best mixed doubles tournament of all time.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah, 2011 was better, but yeah.
I agree with Buderak too. I think the other slams, I'm assuming this is going to be massive and very successful.
I think they're jealous.
Yeah.
And the other ones are going to wish they already are doing it in 2026.
They're going to like hold off 1 year as like little like kind of petty maybe like out of spite and then just jump on board and they're going to make a lot of money the same thing. They're going to kill it. So
yeah, exactly. Anyway. That's that. I'm looking forward to it. We usually do housekeeping things at the beginning of the show. We're going to go early. We're still looking into our bracket challenge. We're doing our bracket challenge. When the draw comes out on Thursday, bracket challenge will be up. We've been doing it. We did it at Wimbledon. We did it at Roland Garros and Wimbledon. We're trying to give away $2,000. Apparently, we're checking with our lawyers to make sure we can. I didn't even know we had lawyers, quite frankly, but we're looking into this. I don't get it, but we're going to make it happen. Just know that. Also coaching update. We were going to coach someone. We might have like a sponsor issue with that now. So I don't know. We might coach someone. We might not. We got to backtrack. We're backtrackers. But we'll see. Also guys, I had an idea, you know, Tommy Paul's fiance now, Paige Lorenz. I was thinking like a Nothing Major Dairy Boy collab.
It's a clothing wear.
Yeah.
I'm not that much on the internet.
I think it's like clothes and maybe bedding, maybe food,
lifestyle.
Mostly lifestyle. I don't know, collab. I think we should collab with Dairy Boy.
I mean,
I think
it'd be
big.
10 months to get hats, so I'm sure by 2027 we'll get it done.
big for Dairy Boy if they could, you know.
Yeah.
If they want to collab with us.
Yeah.
All right. And my one other thought. When you on our pod, you guys notice like the intro music and the outro music?
Yes.
You like it?
This might be another legality issue where we have to like get the rights to it.
That's what I was asking. Can you just have any, can you go back to Taylor Swift? Can you just have a Taylor Swift song in the intro of your podcast?
I feel like no.
I think so.
I feel like no.
Oh, I guess no.
Producer Charlie says no.
They're saying, producers. No. Suits are saying no. They're so lame. all right, never mind then. We'll keep our intro music.
We'll ask her. If she comes to the US Open, we'll ask.
We'll ask. How's that? Yeah. Good call, Stevie.
We'll have Booty introduce us.
Yep. Yes, we'll get the intro.
Maybe, or we could just have Sam. You know what we should do? Loser of the US Open bracket challenge has to sing like a jingle to open and close.
Yes.
We have to like the voice recording, we have to use it for an
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to write the song too.
You got to write the song and you got to sing it.
Produce it.
That's actually pretty good. Or we could just make John do it since he's not here.
Even better.
I don't mind
Even
that.
Better.
He's probably tuned out by this point.
Yeah. All right. That's it. Fun show. We'll be back. So we're doing a live show Wednesday on the grounds of the US Open on the main stage, 12 to 12:30. That will be the Friday show. So when that comes out, we're going to record it. If you're lucky and on the grounds, you're going to get to hear the Friday show on Wednesday. What a treat for the people. Yeah,
giving away hats as well. If you guys are there, come say hello to all of us. We're excited. Our first live.
Yep.
I'm excited for you guys.
I know. Well, we're bummed to miss you. Steve will be your column match for Tennis Channel. Can we Zoom you in?
We're working on it.
We're going to hopefully get you involved.
We're working on it.
But anyway, live pod Wednesday, and then that will be recorded, and that will be the pod for Friday. So we will see you guys then.
We get something major next week, baby. We're back.
Yeah. Something major. Back next week, too. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, Mondays.
Wednesdays. We don't know how Fridays, the schedule works anymore.
Sundays. All right, that's it. See ya.